go in with sort of, you know, sort of strong messages saying that SSRIs are evil all the time, but to open up conversations and to provide information and scaffolds for individuals as well as healthcare providers to make decisions that work well in their lives and in conjunction with other people, to have more of a collaborative approach to this, as opposed to saying, don't prescribe them. Pharmaceuticals are terrible. I say, you know, they are an option, but we need to care. And we need all parties involved in this decision to have information that they don't currently have. So I can tell you, in the sexual medicine community, I have presented on PSSD a few times, some of the research we've done, as well as kind of more overviews. There has been a lot of interest, and there has been a lot of questions about how can we best serve people in sort of that discussion around SSRI use and prescriptions and doing more careful assessments for depression and anxiety, et cetera. And so I think, though, that when you go against structures and you go against professions that, you know, sort of hold a lot of power, pharma companies hold a lot of power, psychiatrists, doctors hold a lot of power, sometimes you are sort of going against, you know, sort of the current. But I always say persist, provide good data, work with people who have lived experience, and continue to educate people. And if, let's say, the doctors are not, you know, necessarily open to this idea, then what we could work on are the patients themselves in terms of having better conversations, switching doctors, trying non-SSRI medications, and coming to their doctors with their concerns. So we need to work on multiple prongs of, you know, sort of groups of people in order to make this work for most people who are going through sort of very concerning mood disorders, right? So that's where I stand. That was a long-winded sort of response, but it is very complex in my world anyways. It's not an easy black or white thing for me.
And you, Dr. Healy, are you an apostate at the American Psychiatric Association conference?
Not remotely, no. Not an outlier at all. I've actually been a consultant and run clinical trials for most of the major pharmaceutical companies. So, you know, I'm anything but an outlier. My insights on what's going on come because I've had close links with the pharmaceutical companies, where people who are in kind of positions of power have talked openly about what they know the drugs can do. They can cause people to become suicidal. They can cause PSSD. But like the tobacco companies and lung cancer, you don't expect the companies producing tobacco to do the research on lung cancer, because that means they have to admit legal liability for the problems. So the pharmaceutical industry are aware of all this, but they can't be seen to do the research. They can't be seen to say, yes, we know that the problem was there, we've known it was there for a long time, and we're going to try and find the answer. Unlike tobacco, doctors make a living out of these drugs. So they haven't been quick to jump in and find the answers. Unlike doctors when faced with lung cancer, who were the people who did the research and pinned down the link between people actually smoking and getting lung cancer. Let me give you one quick story, which I think brings home how we should view these drugs. SSRIs can be helpful. But as I told you, the man who created them, a man called Arvid Carlson, said, yes, they can help some people, but not all people. And if you go on SSRIs when they don't help you, he said, look, these drugs can make you suicidal. Some of his patients who were put on SSRIs said to him, look, your SSRIs don't suit us. When we go back smoking, we feel a lot better. So he did a clinical trial comparing people who didn't respond to SSRIs to people who then went on nicotine, and found that for that group of people, the patients were right. Nicotine was much better for them, helping their mood and helping them feel less anxious. Now, the moral of the story is, we all know nicotine comes with risks, and that you need to know what you're doing if you're going to opt to take it. You need to at least be sure that it's helping you, that you feel more relaxed to it, that your mood's better if you're going to take these risks. We should be viewing all the drugs we use, SSRIs and nicotine, et cetera, in much the same way. These things can be poisonous, and the art of medicine is to bring good out of the use of these tricky, dangerous kind of substances, which can do good, provided you and your doctor are working closely together.
Thank you so much, all three of you, for talking with me today.
Thank you, Jesse, for listening to us.
Thank you so much.
Okay, Jesse, good to talk.
That's your Canada Land. I hope you enjoyed it. I can be emailed about what you heard today at jesse@canadaland.com. I read all the email I received there. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Caleb Thompson does the audio production and editing for this show, and this episode was fact-checked by Julian Abraham. Canada Land's director of audio is Max Collins. I am our editor and publisher. Our theme music is by So Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it.
I'm Noor Azriyeh, and today we're talking about the news. We'll talk about poor Alberta's $8 billion surplus. We'll talk about Canada's labor trafficking problem. But mostly, we'll be investigating a Polyev-shaped hole in the Canadian media landscape.
Pierre Polyev, thank you so much for joining us.
It's good to see you, Sean. It's been a little while.
We have so much to talk about.
Wait for that. On the pod today, we've got national politics reporter from Canada's National Observer, Arno Kopetsky. Welcome.
Hello, Noor.
Not one, but two defeats for Pierre Polyev.
Lost the election and lost his seat.
I think it was a big strategic error.
He's adamant he's staying on as Conservative leader.
Pierre Polyev will face a leadership review early next year. It will be an honor to continue to fight for you and to be a champion of your cause as we go forward.
Feels like I'm ready to shed a tear here.
Yeah.
This has been the question swirling in op-eds and columns, and definitely the question swirling around in my group chat with Sam and Aviva, who work with me on the politics show on Tuesday. Has he disappeared? Is he plotting a comeback? Is he licking his wounds? Where is Pierre? Arno, do you find your mind having these Pierre Polyev thoughts the way I do?
It's a little intrusive. I wish I could just forget him about him entirely, but he's still there, Noor.
He's lingering.
Is indeed plotting. But it is a little less requited than it was for the last 2 years.
Let me read some of these headlines. You know, for some columnists like Dan Lett from the Winnipeg Free Press, Polyev is limping. Here's the headline. Polyev limps away from spectacular campaign crash, gets hit by fact-filled EV. This article, by the way, like, I would never want Dan Lett to write a op-ed about me because it...
Nobody does. You never want an op-ed written about you.
No, please no, because this article focused on Pierre Polyev's recent attack ad against the Liberals' electric vehicle policies.
Well, somebody wants to tell you where to go and how to get there. It's the Liberal government's new attempt to ban your gas-powered vehicle. Starting next year, they plan to bring in what's called a zero-emissions vehicle mandate that becomes more and more stringent until it bans gas-powered vehicles altogether.
The campaign's called Pull the Plug, but Dan Lett couldn't even get to the point of the article, which is the EV attack ads, before absolutely roasting the out of Pierre Polyev. For weeks now, political reporters have been trying to figure out which version of Pierre Polyev is going to rise from the political ashes. You know, there's a Toronto Star opinion exchange between Susan Delacourt and Matt Gurney, which is basically like a What Happened to Pierre roundtable. Matt pops the big question, and he literally calls it that, like, is he safe? Is Pierre Poilievre safe? The article ends with a line from Susan, which is, Poilievre may be able to save himself, but it's going to require a reversal of where he is right now, the disappearing conservative leader. Max Fawcett, your colleague at the National Observer, is jumping on this too. Surprise, surprise, knowing Max, I was waiting for this very piece. Pierre Poilievre might be cooked by Max Fawcett and the CNO. 10 points for the Gen Z lingo. I see you. There's a Globe and Mail article. Can Pierre Poilievre outrun the yesterday's man label?
Konrad Jakubowski.
Exactly. It feels like there's a huge Poilievre dunking contest going on here.
Well, yes, I think there is indeed. I will just note that people were saying all of these exact same things about the Liberal Party for the last 2 years up until everything flipped entirely upside down and they took it away. So let's keep that in mind before we pronounce the death and the end of Poilievre's political career. But absolutely, things are looking dark for him right now. I love that analogy of him like limping out of a train wreck and only to get hit by another car as it drives by or whatever. You know, it's just one thing after another for the guy. He didn't just lose the election. He lost his own seat and he's locked out of the House of Commons. You know, he's never been further from the spotlight in his entire political career, I think, spanning back decades. I followed his campaign around the country in April. The National Observer sent me around to do that. So I went to about 15 of his rallies from Halifax to Vancouver Island and in between multiple press conferences. The vibe at those rallies was pretty crazy for a Canadian political movement. It was rambunctious, thousands of people everywhere, small towns, big cities. And one of the fixtures of every one of these rallies were the right-wing conservative influencers or content creators.
Hello, hello. Oh, thank you, thank you. Hi, hi, hi. Hi, hi, hi. Look at this lineup. Oh my God, it's keep on going. And it's an hour and a half before the event starts.
You'd see them, they've got their iPhones at the end of these polls and they're walking through the crowds and they've all got hundreds of thousands of followers, which I could only dream of. And they're walking through the crowd and people are asking for selfies with them. And so these influencers are themselves as popular almost as Poilievre was. And, you know, they all, like Poilievre, sort of rode a wave of enthusiasm out of the Freedom Convoy. A lot of these guys, and women, but mostly men, these influencers became politically activated during the Freedom Convoy and then started up their YouTube channels and just got these huge followings. And they've been super supportive of Poilievre.
Are they rising from the ashes as Pierre Poilievre is?
Poilievre has just disappeared from their feeds ever since the election. It's not just one or two of them, but universally, I looked at all of their, well, not all, but like as many as I could track down, you know, over a dozen of these folks. And they're still fighting the culture wars. They still are all in on conservatives. They're sharing speeches from conservative MPs in the House approvingly and selling all the same messages of anti-vax and anti-Palestine and climate change denial and all of those things. But the one thing that is glaringly absent from their feeds is any mention of Pierre Poilievre whatsoever.
Huh. It's interesting because, sure, he's disappeared from the spotlight, but he's not really doing anything differently. You know, he's still doing sit-down interviews. He sat down with Sean Spear from The Hub.
Pierre Poilievre, thank you so much for joining us.
It's good to see you, Sean. It's been a little while.
We have so much to talk about.
It's like a 40-minute interview. The man's got his own podcast.
Hi, everyone. Pierre Poilievre, leader of Canada's Conservatives. As part of my series to introduce you to the growing and even more impressive Conservative caucus, I introduce to you Chief Billy Morin.
He's out there, he's doing press, and you talked about this a little bit. His appearances outside the House of Commons have made him look to really distanced and less connected with his party and his MPs, and he frankly looks a little bit lonely and sad out there.
He does.
Back to work at caucus today after the most recent election. Obviously, we didn't come out on top.
But you're right that I haven't been seeing him on my social media the way that I had been for a long time. I'm on TikTok a lot, maybe too much, and I should seek help. But I also get a lot of these like Canadian politics TikToks, and it's just like conservative MP roasts liberal minister in the House of Commons. Like I get a lot of those,
yeah.
And I used to get a lot of Pierre Poilievre in the House of Commons and like digging at the liberals and making a fool out of Justin Trudeau.
The high school drama teacher over here accuses others of liking the sounds of their own voices. This from a guy who, if he were made of chocolate, he would eat himself.
I'm not seeing that anymore. I'm seeing lots of videos of Andrew Scheer.
If photo ops and phony rhetoric actually got things done in this country, then Justin Trudeau would still be prime minister.
Melissa Lantzman.
A hat trick for the prime minister, but not the good type. Three reports released in just one day paint a...
And you're right that there has been this, like, social media drop-off of him, even conservative influencers that I had followed. Why do you think this is happening?
One thing I think it sort of reveals is sort of the groupthink of us, both us journalists and I think some of those influencers, that we tend to move as packs, and suddenly everyone has just sort of, without saying so, decided to ignore Pierre Poilievre after having spent 2 years just drenching him with press attention, you know, and he just got so much of it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that switched. So there's a thing about the fickle nature of media coverage. You know, Mark Bury wrote this pretty great, I thought, biography of Poilievre called Ripper. And in that, he described Poilievre as somebody who really hasn't changed in his entire political career. And he had this great line about it when Pierre Poilievre became so incredibly popular and rose to the top, both of the party and national polls, that it wasn't Poilievre who had changed. He was doing the same thing he'd been doing for 20 years. It was the country that changed and came to him. That really influenced the way that I thought about Poilievre and the country and sort of the political climate. And I think the country has changed once again, in large part because of Trump, of course, and all that that has sort of illuminated for us about our priorities and where we want to go and where we don't want to go. So here he is now, still not changing.
Arno, we like to duly note stories on this show so they don't get overlooked. Do you have something you want to duly note?
I sure do, Noor. One thing that I would like to duly note is Alberta's roaring oil and gas industry. Contrary to all the complaints one hears from the Premier of Alberta that Ottawa is choking oil production and refusing to let the province flourish in the way that God meant it to, Alberta just posted an $8 billion surplus, largely based on the fact that Alberta is producing and exporting more oil and gas than ever before in its history, including to Tidewater, thanks to the pipeline that Ottawa bought and built from Alberta to Vancouver, where I live. Alberta is killing it. They're doing great. They're doing so well. They're getting everything a person could ask for. And I don't know how that doesn't precede every single media comment on Danielle Smith's complaints about how Alberta is suffering under the yoke of a tyrannical Ottawa. They are getting everything they want. They're flourishing. Things are going great.
Danielle Smith, you hear that?
You listening?
Duly noted. Arno, I want to duly note a story. This also an immigration story. I'm on an immigration wave, maybe because I'm an immigrant and I pay attention to these things. But there's a recent story by CTV News written by Danton Unger. Hotel owners in Manitoba charged in labor trafficking investigation. So essentially, two women working at a hotel in Manitoba came forward to the police with allegations of labor trafficking, and then two other alleged victims came forward as well. These four victims were all from India and were recruited to come to Canada with a promise of a labor market impact assessment, which is an LMIA agreement. These agreements help you in your permanent residency application. And this LMIA would also legalize their work in the country, but only one of them actually was granted the LMIA. All four were allegedly forced to work 15-hour days, 7 days a week. They were being paid less than half of minimum wage, And they were also allegedly threatened with deportation and intimidation tactics. One of the victims, allegedly their identification documents were being withheld. And I'm assuming that's things like a passport and a permit and things like that. To be clear, none of these charges have been proven in courts and any court, and they're now a matter of the courts. But this story is just one of so many. And I've just been noticing this kind of like rise of vilifying immigrants, and especially immigrants from South Asia. All of these victims were from India. And I think there's been so much hateful rhetoric that I see on social media these days. You know, there was even a report published by the Institute for Strategic Dialogue that found that there was a sharp rise in online hate targeting the South Asian community in Canada, specifically on X. And personally, I have been seeing it, these kind of rampant, hateful comments about South Asian immigrants, people who are trying to come here for a better life in general. And I think that conversations about immigration in this country have been reignited. There is a newfound focus on how many people are we letting in? Who are we letting in? Where are they from? What can they provide us? Immigration is talked about as this like super transactional process. And being an immigrant and seeing how those conversations are playing out, it's really interesting to me how there are some folks who immigrate here who are not vilified in the same way as those from South Asia. That being me, I am a good immigrant in a lot of people's eyes, and too many others. There are some good and there are some bad immigrants, and I just think that the conversation is getting really worrisome, and I want to continue to talk about the fact that these people are also victims. They are not trying to, like, play the game and dupe the immigration system, and I think that we should be focusing on what is the root cause of all of the issues that we're seeing, and I think it's not people. It's not individuals. I just want to keep talking about immigration because if the government's talking about it, we should.
Silence is violence. I couldn't agree more. No, we got to dig into the better angels of our nature and proceed with humanity for all of these people, these humans who are coming here and trying to make a better life, just like most of us or our parents did.
Exactly.
And, yeah, we're all, you know, with the exception of First Nations and Indigenous folks, you know, the vast majority of Canadians are immigrants. And it's so important to remember that. Duly noted.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining me. You can email me about it at noor@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. The good, bad, the ugly. You can find me posting on Blue Sky at noorazriye.bluesky.whatever comes after that. Arno, where can people find you?
You can read my stories at the National Observer. And also, I write a monthly column for the Walrus magazine. And if they want to reach out to me personally and tell me how much they love or hate what I've most recently written.
Don't encourage.
It's a sign of success when people reach out to you, no matter what. I'm on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Arno Kopensky.
This episode was produced by James Nicholson. The associate producer is Lucy Lemonnier, who also did the fact-checking. Mixing and mastering is by Tristan Capicchione. Our director of audio is Max Collins. And the editor and publisher of Canada Land is Jesse Brown. Theme music is by So Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you.
vision of a puncturist between my iron shoulder blades.
Trapped weightless under.